you ever wondered who we have to thank for all these wacky conspiracy theories about psychodrama rituals being conducted for occult purposes, then you've got to hear about James Shelby Downard's conspiracy classic King Kill 33. And here's the good news. I'm about to deep dive you through this special three-part series of conspiracy classics here on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. That's right. Some of you already know what I'm talking about when I talk about King Kill 33 and the psychodrama ritual conspiracies about the assassination of JFK. We're talking about the birth of the conspiracy theorist movement. We're talking about the birth of the term conspiracy theory. This is where it all comes together. This is where it started. This is long overdue. And this is a three-part series. This is a bonus supporters only series of conspiracy classics. A new branding of show for the occult symbolism and pop culture world. I like it. because we're also going to do 1984. Not today, obviously, but this summer. Conspiracy classics. Where did it all start? Let's go back to the beginning, right? We stand on the shoulders of giants to make conspiracy theories about what's going on in the world today. Well, let's drop that ego. Let's go back to the OGs. What did they say? Because that's who we should be listening to, right? Don't listen to me. I'm just some idiot who read a bunch of these books. Let's talk about what they think. What did they think? So today we're going to start a deep dive three-part series into one of the most important conspiracy theories of all time. And you've heard about the assassination of JFK. You've heard your uncle at Thanksgiving. He had his own conspiracies about, oh, it's the mafia, the CIA, it's whatever. He ain't dropping knowledge like James Shelby Downard, though. Most people don't even know about this stuff. I didn't know about it. My main man, Ryan Page. Ryan, where you at? Hit me up, brother. My main man, Ryan Page, turned me on to James Shelby Downard a few years ago. I said, who? He's like, dude, if you're going to be into this world of occult symbolism, you better know who this guy is. And I said, all right, well, let's take a look. And we're going to be cooking up something. Me and Ryan are going to be cooking up some James Shelby Downard stuff here in the near future if he would ever get back to me. He's Mr. Hollywood, Mr. Busy, I know. Too busy for some jerk off in his podcast studio. But when he's ready, I'm ready. We're going to do it. It could be the thing that blows off everything important about the world of conspiracy theories. Now, in part one today, when we start our journey, and again, thank you for my supporters, people that support the show. Love you guys. You're the ones keeping this show alive. Thank you very much. As part of my show of appreciation in return, I give you bonus content every month. And this three-parter is going to start in June, and it depends on how long it takes me to get parts two and three recorded. Might spill over into July. So you're kind of getting three bonus shows. My goodness. And how appropriate, right? King Kill 33, three-part series. How do you love that? So in part one, which is today's episode, we're going to talk about James Shelby Downard. A brief look at who he was and what this King Kill 33 is all about. What a weird name, right? We're going to start exploring this book that he wrote. It's an essay. We'll talk about that in a second. Secret governments, the Freemasonic grand architect God, Americans not having the truth. He said this back in the 70s. He wrote this in the 70s. I don't know. Let me start there. Long before a lot of the people we all know and love, before my red pill daddies, Bill Cooper, David Icke, Alex Jones. And we're going to start, like I said, we're breaking this essay, this book, into three shows because there's three sections that I'm going to break it up into. Today we're talking about set one through set three, apropos again with the threes. But in set one, we're talking about the Hellfire Club, and this is where it all began. Satanic sexy time in the caves with Ben Franklin. All right, with them blue face hunnits. Set two, he's throwing them blue face hunnits on them inner cave thoughts. In set two, we're just being silly today. Set two, We're going to talk about sexual geometry, about how mathematics ties into Egyptian history. In set three, we talk about Shakespeare's Macbeth and Scotland, which connects into Carl Jung and the crossroads of sex magic, the opposing polarities coming together. We'll talk about some cross-dressing rituals. I've got a fascinating connection into Lil Nas X. It's unbelievable. You got to hear it to believe it. And again, this was all written in the 70s, which is mind-blowing. This guy did not get his flowers while he was alive. I promise you that, but we're going to do it right here on this show. We'll talk about Lyndon Baines Johnson's bloodlines, Macbeth at the White House, the Scottish Black Watch, and wrap it up with the Holy House of Herodom symbolism. It's a lot. I got this massive amount of notes. It should be a four-parter, but I think I can get it done in three. So, without further ado, who was James Shelby Downard? The original conspiracy theorist. The guy who put the ideas of occult symbolism into the masses. The idea, well, I wouldn't say into the masses because this is very underground, this whole Downard King Kill 33. But in the underground world of conspiracy occult stuff, he was known, right? But he seems to be the one who floated this idea, I would argue, first, in a way, of connecting all these different dots together of a group of the cryptocracy, Freemasonry, and synchro mysticism all together. Now, Michael Hoffman was a collaborator with James Shelby Downard, and he deserves respect put on him too. He's still around. I need to get him on my show. He wrote a book. Oh, I can never remember the name of this freaking book. Donut had to tell me. I think it's just called Secret Societies. Oh my gosh. It's a classic. And he was talking about similar ideas because him and Downard were collaborators of some kind. I don't know the inner workings of how close they were. But they were both talking about this idea of synchro mysticism tying into the cryptocracy of Freemason Illuminati controllers, right? And in King Kill 33, which is our focus today, he talks about the cryptocracy using symbolism, synchronicity, sex magic, and sacred locations and geometry, Kabbalah, to assassinate JFK. Yeah. Now, James Shelby Downard, as I mentioned, is already passed on. He was born in 1913, died in 1998 at the age of 85. He wrote a partial memoir of the first 20 years of his life called Carnivals of Life and Death. I actually have the book. It's hard to find. My man Ryan sent it to me. I got it over there. I got to read it. I haven't read it yet. I'm not even giving the man the respect he deserves yet. I got to read through it, but I've got several. But the King Kill 33 is where I wanted to start with this because that's the document. That's the one. So he writes this partial memoir, Carnivals of Life and Death. Then he wrote a bunch of smaller essays, kind of. King Kill 33, Call to Chaos, which is in Apocalypse Culture 2 by Adam Parfrey. And Adam Gilreilly, also a guest that we had on our show, we talked to him. He gave us his last interview about Charles Manson, which I'm actually watching a Manson show on Peacock right now. It's pretty good. In fact, it supports the ideas of Tom O'Neill's Chaos, because in part one, they talk about how Charles Manson, getting out of prison, eating out of dumpsters, yet somehow gets this car with 500 hits of acid. Who gave that to him? And his first exposure to LSD was at a Grateful Dead concert. Where did they get their acid? Then, Adam Gilreilly, he's really into Downard. He's an expert. I'll get him on here someday to talk Downard. He wrote a book called James Shelby Downard's Mystical War. Like I said, a lot of people pay homage to this guy, rightfully so. And then there's also interviews called in the 1970s called Sirius Rising, where Jim Brandon, a.k.a. William Grimstad, interviewed Downard. You can find it on YouTube, some of it. It's one of those mysterious recordings that people can't quite track down. So on to King Kill 33. That's the gist of James Shelby Downard, okay? There's a lot more. I actually read part of the Carnivals of Life and Death, and he talks about, he seems very paranoid, like people are chasing him, and talks about this what do they call it, the great whore, this woman that he got tangled up with. Oh, it's a whole thing. So when we talk about King Kill 33, I'm going to give you the paraphrase overview right now. We're going to talk about what this whole thing is, because when you get into reading it, it's going to be really confusing, all right? Because this book or essay was apparently never published by an actual publisher, and it's only been circulated on the underground. And I've seen PDFs. You can find them online easily. You can go on eBay, and you'll see paper copies of it for like $60. But it's hard to know because, do I have it in my notes here? Because the PDFs that I found online, the pages are all jumbled up. And you got to sort of decode it and put it back together in the right order, which is what I did. So buyer beware. I'm worried that the people on eBay just found the same PDFs that I did, printed them out, stapled them together, and said, here you go, $60. That's what I'm worried about. That's why I didn't buy one from them. And they actually paraphrase the whole King Kill 33 in Apocalypse Culture by Adam Parfrey in a section, The Call to Chaos, by Downard himself. And The Call to Chaos, also worth your time to read, because he talks about similar things, and there's a lot of overlap with King Kill 33. He's talking about how America is a witch's cauldron with ritualistic crimes and psycho-political psychodramas performed towards a master plan, a new world order. And these ritual crimes are always about sex and death, paying devotion to their universal god, their grand architect of Freemasonry. And these rituals are a rite of passage to put society and mankind into this new age, the Novus Ordo Seclorum. Which, by the way, was on the back of Elon Musk's jacket at the Met Gala just a couple years ago, if you didn't catch that. In the Call to Chaos, he says, the fundamental concept of this universal religion. That sounds like, you know, that voice, because I'm terrible at voices, but I try them for you guys anyway. That sounds like Howard Cosell. Actually, it sounds like the guys on, was it Better Off Dead? Those two Asian dudes in the car who learned English by watching Howard Cosell. That's kind of what James Shelby, Downard sounds like a mix between Howard Cosell and, he looks like Colonel Sanders from Kentucky Fried Chicken. The fundamental concept of this universal religion was the postulate that all forms of existence emanate from the same universal power, and they all consequently seek a mystical reunion with that power. Mystical reunions. And that's what it always comes down to. It always comes down to religion, right? Whatever your religion is, like, people, they can't, there's no chill. They're just like, no, we got a God who needs me to do all this stuff. It's really weird. It's a really weird situation here for the human race. But he talks about, in The Call to Chaos, the Freemasons using the science of symbolism and gematria, Kabbalah, signs, symbols, words, mystical toponymy. That's the geography of witchcraft, etc. And mystical toponymy is a big part of this. It's mentioned in King Kill 33. We'll talk about that when it gets time for that. He's always talking about New Mexico as the land of enchantment, because that's where the Jornada del Muerto goes through, the journey of the dead man. He talks about El Camino del Diablo. That's the devil's highway. And his claim is that the Jornada del Muerto goes from, it starts off as a sacrificial altar in Mexico at a Teotihuacan temple site. Is that Mexico? I know it's mentioned on Ancient Aliens. That's the reason why I know how to pronounce Teotihuacan. Who said Ancient Aliens is brain rot, you know? It doesn't matter. It starts somewhere south of America at a sacrificial altar temple site for the bat god. And in Mexican mythology, the bat god is the devil. And these paths of the Jornada del Muerto lead to the killing of the king ritual via El Paso's Kern's Place, which is where a guy named Peter Kern built the Gate of a Thousand Doors, the Gate of Death, and supposedly consecrated it with a blood sacrifice. That's what I'm saying. It goes deep. But I'm going to explain all of that as we walk through King Kill 33. You're going to get it in a more slower, digestible form. Now, part of the ritual here, when we talk about the ritual of mankind, is an alchemical process. It's the sacred marriage, the Eros Gamos. It's the idea that reality is comprised of twin cosmic reality principles, aka masculine and feminine, opposing polarities. And when these things are divorced, it liberates primordial energy. I'm going to read you from him without his voice. The idea of a universe composed of competing masculine and feminine powers can be explained in electrical terms. As a result of the union between the polar male, positive, protonic, and female, negative, electronic, primordial matter, hydrogen atoms maybe, was produced. The separation of the male and female components of primordial matter can perhaps be thought of as a divorce and a return of the two to their pre-creational chaos-inhabiting single state. The infinitesimal quantity of primordial matter is called an atom. The formula of the parity between primordial matter and primordial energy is written, can be written in the Einsteinian equation E equals mc squared. Just a new label on an old bottle, seems to me. Well, now, the GAOTU gang, that's the grand architect of the universe. He's referring to the Freemasonic cryptocracy, the Illuminati, okay? Well, now, the Illuminati, on that fine summer day in 1945, with the help of their scientific sorcerer's apprentices, fissionated atoms and thus broke up the sacred marriage of the basis of creation, and in doing so, violated their own supreme law of the universe, upsetting the equilibrium apple cart of the cosmos. So when he talks about king killing, it's a reference to alchemy. The King Kill 33 is an alchemical ritual. Because in alchemy, they use the symbol of the serpent crucified on a Tau cross. And the serpent represents the cosmic male-female union, right? Also symbolized as the two-headed androgyne, or the Remus. And another symbol for... He talks about the symbol of the Egyptian Trinity, because that plays into all this, the Osiris, Isis, Horus Trinity. He describes how in the sacred geometry, it was represented as the right triangle, where Osiris is the male or the base, Isis is the female or the upright, the perpendicular, and Horus is the product or the hypotenuse, the child, the offspring of the two. Because Pythagoras went to Egypt to find all these secrets out, and he did, and that's when he came back with the Pythagorean theorem, a squared plus b squared equals c squared. He also talks about order and chaos, how everything will eventually return to chaos, and he uses the term, he says, the return will be done via cosmic fire, returning to chaos. The destruction of primordial matter is what gives back cosmic fire. It unleashes the primordial energy, aka the cosmic fire. Holy Twin Peaks, Batman. Twin Peaks, the return. He uses that language. The return will be done via cosmic fire. You got all this fire walk with me. You got obviously what happens at the end of season 3 of Twin Peaks. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out. I think it's on Mubi right now. Twin Peaks, the return is showing us a lot of James Shelby Downard ideas. As I already discussed in the Gray Lodge, we're going to go further into it today. I'm going to bring it up a couple times, so hang in there. Don't get your panties in a bunch. If you're like, oh God, not the Twin Peaks. Chill. Just chill. I mean, I'm going to mention it maybe two or three times. Just a couple times. It's about, because that's what Twin Peaks The Return could be about. It's about returning to chaos via the cosmic fire. We have the Trinity Blast. That's what Downard was saying. That's what you see in Twin Peaks The Return. He also says that it's about making contact with supernatural entities through sex magic, rituals, tantric, and they take women designated to be the goddess or the great whore. And he talks about the king killing ritual being done at Dealey Plaza as a symbolic reenactment of the murder of the Freemasonic founder, Hiram Abiff, the guy who built Solomon's Temple, who was killed by three assassins. And Downard connects that to the three hobos, a.k.a. Woody Harrelson's dad, the three tramps, right? So that's the very short version of what we're about to get into, but we're going to go much deeper and explain all of these ideas starting right now. So when you find your copy of King Kill 33, if you do, good luck. It's one of those weird things. The title says, that my title page on my PDF says James Shelby Downard with Michael Hoffman. So Michael Hoffman part of this, right? He's still cranking out content, Michael Hoffman. He was just on Tinfoil Hat not too long ago. I'm overdue to get him on here, but what I got to do is I got to reread his books with the notes so I can prepare to interview him properly, right? And my copy of King Kill says it was published by Independent History and Research from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So the question is, was this thing actually published? It seems like he's got a publisher. And then it links, it mentions a website, which apparently was bought by somebody else because it's just a bunch of weird AI type language and articles about how to improve your home and your lawn. I was like, this is not James Shelby Downard. Also, I should note that my copy of King Kill seems to be missing pages 3 through 8, which is, from what I can tell through my research and my haranguing of Dr. Anteater, is that that is what you'll find. Missing pages. What year is this? Again, Twin Peaks joke. What year is this thing printed, published? No idea. Doesn't say on my PDF. But apparently it was the 1970s. We'll get into this and I'll prove to you that it was done after 1978. But it was clearly after JFK's assassination, after the quote-unquote moon landing, after Charles Manson, and so on. And in fact, if you read Apocalypse Culture, his Cult of Chaos article, that was written in 1987. So, but yeah, the King Kill, let's get into it. It starts out talking about a secret government, deep state, right? And he talks about the history of political parties, basically boiling down to Freemasonic cryptocracy versus non, which is what the JFK assassination was all about. And he says the Masons will reveal the truth, but slowly. He refers to this as the freeze, wait, revive process, meaning you reveal it slow enough that people won't revolt and throw a fit. Which I would argue you see elements of that with modern day politics. You'll see them talk about releasing certain files, or they'll have political influencers online pitch an idea because they want to see what the comments show. How are people feeling about this? Are they ready to hear more? Are they still angry? You know, they do that kind of thing. And the secret government plays on the apathy of Americans, which I would argue is at an all-time high. Because they want to make sure we're not going to revolt. There is power in the masses. He says, he calls it episodic revelations of the same type stun them into inaction. And the goal, the game plan from his book says, the endeavor to bring about syncretism in opposing principles of a mystic power and to green Israel, rebuild the Temple of Solomon, and establish a one-world government.
Huh.
That's interesting. And it's all about them believing they're reconnecting with their God, this grand architect, the universal consciousness, whatever this is. They think they can bring about that connection. And he lays out this idea that Americans actually don't even have the truth about which to rally, which I find very accurate. He describes, he says that this is why we have these two extreme parties, because nobody is allowed to have the real truth. He says, there's no happy last-minute rescue waiting just around tomorrow because Americans do not have the truth about things around which to rally, and most just want money, which would enable them to get the things that they have been told that they should and must have. A critique of capitalism, which is what I'm always curious about. I do think that the capitalism, as good as it is rife with manipulation. This is a very 1984-esque approach, like when the Ministry of Truth, Mini-True, as they call it in 1984, continues to obfuscate the truth so nobody knows what's real. It's a whole plot point of 1984. Nobody knows what's real anymore. They keep changing the past. And it's the same way that AI is definitely going to do with social media. I mean, we're already questioning if certain videos are real because it can do that. And that's part of the plan, to not have the truth so that you don't know how to rally. And that's what they do in 1984, which I wonder if that's where Downer got inspired for that idea. He blames the Freemasons and he says that most of them are unaware of the Masonic cryptocracy in the U.S. Like I said, right? So some of them just want to flip pancakes and do some fundraisers. James Downard says that the higher degree Masons use a science of names to encode various rituals, like the fertility and death symbolism as part of the killing of the king ritual. He calls it the greening ritual of JFK. And they suppress this science of names because it would expose the connection of Freemasonry with mysticism, or, as I would say, he's referencing like the Illuminati with mysticism, and the influence that it has on the world. I think we're very close to some kind of disclosure or revelation of the method that occult practices are being done to make contact with entities and AI. But they need to wait until we're to the point of no return, which is soon. And he says they don't tell you this stuff because it would cause too much distrust in America. That's his focus, obviously, because he's in America. But he says it would cause too much distrust from Americans, and the Masonic progressivism, liberty, equality, and such. Those who shielded the conspiracy and the true nature of the U.S. government. Which is why I think we're never going to get the truth about the aliens, the JFKs, the Epsteins. It reveals too much. They can't tell us that they're doing satanic sex magic rituals to make contact with entities for knowledge, for gnosis. Like I said, but when it's too late, that's when they'll tell us. Not until the AI gods are here will they tell us that they're doing occult rituals to communicate with entities the whole time. That's what, when I interviewed Dr. Jacques Vallée, that was kind of what I think he was trying to sort of tell us in my own interpretation of what he said. It seems like he's saying, hey, some of these occult things, Maybe there's something to that. Then, and this is where my page 3 through 8 is missing. And then they restart again. Like I said, the PDFs are all scrambled up, but I already did the hard work of restructuring them. Maybe I should print them and sell them on eBay for $60. No, $55. Okay, set one. This is like chapter one now. He calls them set. I actually don't know why. Set one, the Hellfire Club. Excuse me, I need some of my icy drink. You know, Josie gave me grief about drinking ice out of my cup. I drink out of a metal blender bottle thing, right? Because I don't like the plastics, right? I don't want that microplastic BPA in my body. So you get ice clanking around is what you get. So the Hellfire Club, as you know, because you've listened to me long enough, it was a society of partiers who were doing sex orgies, political agitation, and participating in conspiracies. And they sought the destruction of the church, the Catholic Church in particular. And all the leaders of the British government were members, like Benjamin Franklin, who had published the first Freemasonic book in America. And he says that Ben Franklin and the founder of the Hellfire Club, Francis Dashwood, actually wrote a prayer book that would become the basis of the American Protestant Church prayers. And the book was called the Franklin de Spencer Prayer Book, because Francis Dashwood was actually named Lord Le de Spencer. And they wrote it at the West Wycombe location where they were doing sex magic rituals. And Dashwood would end up digging out this massive cave on this estate to move the sex magic rituals underground. And Downard, who's, I'm just reading you all of his, I'm paraphrasing all the things he's talking about. Downard says that the soil from that dig was used to build a road to Brunei University, where there was a cybernetic department, which is all about AI or machine intelligence. It's human cooperation with machines. My man was talking about AI in the 70s, bro. Come on now. Now, I did some research into this book, the Franklin de Spencer Prayer Book. It's actually called the Franklin Prayer Book, or the Book of Common Prayer, and I found information about it on the National Archives website, of all places, right? So, I'm going to read you, it's kind of long, but I'm going to get through this here, okay? Ready? This is from the National Archives website. Lord Le de Spencer, who as Sir Francis Dashwood had acquired notoriety as a rake, devoted himself in later life to more sober occupations. From 1766 until his death in 1781, he was one of the postmasters general. In 1770, he was concerned with a plan for reconciliation with the colonies. Shortly thereafter, he became interested in altering the liturgy of the Anglican Church, having first reformed himself, in the words of Paul Leicester Ford, he conceived the idea of reforming the Book of Common Prayer. His method of reform was not to change, but to cut. He amended nothing in the familiar order of service. He left out a great deal. By the summer of 1773, he had completed his excisions and drafted a preface to explain why he believed that they were an improvement. At some point, presumably when Franklin visited him at West Wycombe in October of 1772, he showed his work to his guest and asked for suggestions. Franklin must have been glad to oblige. He had already turned his hand to amending the Lord's Prayer, which is pretty blasphemous, right? And here was a chance to improve the church's entire liturgy. Do you know these heathens were doing this? They're making sex magic in the caves, and now they're like, let's rewrite all the church stuff. Crazy. I didn't know about this. Thank goodness James Shelby Downer was on the case. Le Despenser gave him a free hand. Dr. Franklin is desired to add, alter, or diminish as he shall think proper anything herein contained. LLD is by no means tenacious. But Franklin used this license sparingly. His part in the main work of abridgment was confined to reducing the catechism to two questions and their answers, and arranging short selections from the Psalms for reading and singing. The implication of his statement is that the rest of the cutting was done by Despenser, and we have no reason to doubt that it was. The preface, the most interesting part of the volume, was the work of both men, but the Baron's rough draft indicates that he was the principal author. The three fragments in Franklin's hand are identical except for one short passage with the final printed text. Yada, yada. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? The point is that, let's see here. Let me read a little bit more. I'm going to skip a bunch of that. His part in the revision was substantially finished in 73. The volume was then in the press. It was published in September. Its appearance aroused little interest. Some copies were given away, he remarked later, and very few sold. Most became waste paper. In the prayers, so much was retrenched that approbation would hardly be expected. But this was only part of the reason. The prayer book had proved to be resistant in change, even in periods of spiritual turmoil. In the 1770s, the fat slumbers of the church were not yet disturbed by the twitching of reform. Even if they had been, the proposed abridgment did much more, despite the assertions of the preface, than retrench through eliminating superfluidities. The process of condensing amounted for the Orthodox to evisceration, because it struck at the core of the doctrine. The Holy Ghost virtually disappeared from the Trinity, and the mediating role of Christ was reduced almost to the vanishing point. Such innovations could not be expected to impress the faithful. The God of their tradition, far removed from the simplified deity of the abridgment, proved to be immune to simplifying. Ugh. So much reading. Point is, these guys are Illuminae confirmed. Franklin, Dashwood, they're doing satanic sexy rituals, and they're like, okay, we're going to rewrite the church stuff. And just like it says, like the Orthodox would say, what are you doing? They're cutting out all the important pieces. And it's probably by design, because these guys worship Satan. And that's what I think Downer is trying to tell us. Then he talks about a woman who went by the name of Miss Chudley. She was the harlot used in sex magic rituals. They called her Chudley. It was a secret name for concealment. It was actually the name of a town, and they called her the Woman of Common Property. Then he talks about Harpocrates, the Greek god of secrecy that was at various temples and caves and the Hellfire Club locations. And if you recall, allegedly there was a statue of Harpocrates on Epstein Island, if you remember that. And Harpocrates is the Greek form of the Egyptian Horus, which ties us into Aleister Crowley. Remember, there's that image of Aleister Crowley doing the vow of silence. And he talked about bringing out about the age of Horus and so on. Then he talks about Pope Clement the 12th in 1783 decreed the condemnation of Freemasons and secret societies. That's right around the same time that these people are doing some weird stuff in these caves. Then he's talking about, and again, my pages are all chopped up, so it's possible I got one of these out of order, because some of this stuff comes up later, which makes me wonder. He talks about Prince Radzivill, the ancestor of Jackie Kennedy's sister's husband, and he says that he took the whore, Miss Chudley, meaning he was participating in these rituals, because she had a mystical taint. That's what he says. According to legend, Miss Chudley carried a mystical taint. According to the Masonry of Cagliostro, I shouldn't know how to say that, there exists a thing described as the transfer of magnetic force. This mystical taint is supposedly attached to those who traffic in ritual sex perversions. According to the record, the fortunes of the Radzivills have declined ever since. And the mystical taint, I believe he's saying, is that it's a way of contaminating one's spirit through sex magic and occult rituals, and it corrupts your bloodline and puts a curse on the family, which is what leads us up to the JFK thing, I believe, is what he's trying to say. Then we move on to set two, sexual geometry. And he goes back to Pythagoras, which, as you already know, the first secret society ever by the cult of Pythagoras. Talks about Euclid, various theorems and axioms, which are formulas for geometry. Talks about that right angle triangle, like I already talked about. The sum of the squares of the shorter side equal the square of the longer side, the hypotenuse. And talks about how this goes back to ancient Egypt and Pythagoras. And symbolically, it expresses the sexual relationship between Osiris and Isis, which gave birth to Horus. There's your Harpocrates again, right? And the third degree of Freemasonry has this right angle theorem within it, apparently, as does the 47th problem of Euclid. That's the three squares, which is heavy in the world of Freemasonic symbolism. And, oh, by the way, we're currently seeing Trump as the 47th president of America. And then finally, last chapter, and then we're done for the day. This one's kind of long, though. No, maybe not. Set three, Macbeth and Scotland. And he starts off, of all things, discussing individuation and Carl Jung, which, unbeknownst to me, I was writing about in my book, The Dark Path. The idea of becoming whole versus focusing on being good, right? It's about the idea of embracing and understanding the opposing polarities within us of the light and dark. Carl Jung used it as a way to shape an integrated personality. He called it the archetype of unity. Unity. And he talks about Hecate, the female entity, being threefold. You had Diana on earth, Luna in heaven, Hecate in hell. And Hecate is both virgin and whore at the same time. Don't ask me how. But the crossroads were considered sacred to Hecate and all who followed this Masonic sorcery. Quote, crossroads were and are of significance to ritual sex magic. The wearing of clothes of the opposite sex and the performance of bisexual acts are so-called crossroad rites, meaning rituals. The woman engaging in these perversions were, in the vernacular, referred to as dykes, and it was said that they traveled the old dyke road and the old dirt road. Crossroads were also places of human and animal sacrifice, and such rites were often carried out in conjunction with magica sexualis, since the participants recognized an existing relationship between fertility and death. Hecate is therefore also identified as a death goddess, and her sex and death attributes are similar to those ascribed to Venus, Aphrodite, Prone, Cypris, you know, like Cyprian. And this is where we talk about Lil Nas X. Because what Downard is saying is that bisexuality, cross-dressing, done in a ritualistic manner, they would call that going down the old dirt road. And remember, Lil Nas X had the song Old Town Road. Seems curiously connected to Old Dirt Road. Especially when you consider Lil Nas X would go on to later start wearing clothes of the opposite sex and being bisexual. And it really does make you wonder, especially because he had the video for Montero. I picked on Lil Nas X many times over the years. He had the video for Montero where he showed us the unicrystal hexagram of Aleister Crowley, right? And he's talking a lot about the sex and death rituals, and this is part of what I argue is the secrets behind Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. It's about sex and death. Same goes for Twin Peaks. Because Kubrick and Lynch were on similar wavelengths in a way, right? And I think they both were familiar with Downard's work. And speaking of Twin Peaks, didn't Laura get off the motorcycle at sort of a crossroads? It's actually a bending turn, but we can call it a crossroads just for fun, just to force some Twin Peaks references in here. Then Downard's going through the idea of various clans and bloodlines to look at LBJ and his wife Barbara Garson. And he says that the Macbeth clan is related via clannishly to the Bane clan, right? So LBJ's name is Lyndon Baines Johnson. So his mom's name was Rebecca Baines. And I looked her up on Wikipedia and found that her great-grandfather was named George Washington Baines, who was a famous Baptist preacher who was Sam Houston's pastor. And Sam Houston was Texas royalty. That's where Houston, the city, got its name from, Sam Houston, which I believe comes up also later in this King Kill 33. And he goes through all these various spellings because he's very much into the idea of the sacred languages. Bane, Macbean, Bean, Macbean, Macbeth, etc. And he talks about a Bane Bridge legend about a Bane fairy who kept the Bane Bridge. And there's an American battleship named Bane Bridge dedicated to Lyndon Bane Johnson. And to add Twin Peaks into this, you'll recall that the interior shots of the Great Northern Hotel was actually filmed at Kiana Lodge, which is on Bane Bridge Island in Washington in the Puget Sound, which is where the Maury Island incident happened, which gave birth to the whole UFO thing. It's where we got the term flying saucers from, the works, right? And, oh, fun fact, LBJ, massive hog, apparently. My God, he's such a man. Arnold Palmer and LBJ, massive hogs. Then he goes into the history of the three Masonic accusers as a sort of strategy. And this goes back to the Knights Templar. There were three accusers who were Freemasonic assassins. And this part I'm very confused about, to be fully transparent. I don't really understand what he's saying here. And it could be because my pages are all screwed up. But it comes up later, so I don't know. Put a pin in that for now. We'll talk about it later. Now, here's where he talks a little bit about Macbeth. He said, before the assassination of JFK, Shakespeare's Macbeth was performed in the White House with Macbeth played by Franklin Cover. And a photo apparently shows him under a chandelier that was ordered by Jackie Kennedy. And he talks about the symbolism of chandeliers as a test of a magician's power. And he talks about jettatore in Italian means one who casts, and the act is called jettatura, connecting chandeliers with magic and Macbeth, which I think we talk about later on as well. We'll come back to that. He lays out the idea of a heredom, a term used in the upper degree of Freemasonry, like the Royal Order of Heredom. Again, we'll come back to that. Scottish bagpipers were performing at the White House on November 13th, 1963. As you know, JFK assassinated November 22nd, 1963. And these Scottish bagpipers were called the Black Watch. All right. I guess he's implying that there's some dark symbolism to be had there, talking about death. And then he talks about Robert Bruce, the King of Scotland, who created the Order of St. Andrew of the Thistle in 1314. And the symbol for the St. Andrew of the Thistle connects into what he calls the Rite of Heredome and the Knights Templar. And Heredome derives from Horridum, the Latin word meaning heritage, which associates... He associates Saint Germain with the Heredome as this sort of heritage, this royal, I don't know, bloodline? I don't know what he's talking about. And that Saint Germain supposedly knew Jesus and was a conspirator in the Jacobean Masonry and a Grand Master in Theosophy. And Saint Germain was believed to actually be successful in alchemy and had the Philosopher's Stone. So people like Helena Blavatsky do agree with this. They do think that he was an integrated ascended master. So I think Downer was reading through Blavatsky's stuff. And recall also Twin Peaks, very much into Theosophy. And I think the Hooded Guardian from season 2 could be Saint Germain. Hot take. But Herodome is a... We're almost done. Hang in there. Hang in there, folks. Herodome is related to the Greek words heros and domos, which means holy house. And the holy house of Masonry is the Temple of Solomon, which is what all Masonic lodges are built based upon. And you should also know that the term for the house of the temple is the Herodome. That's the Freemasonic temple in Washington, D.C. that they allegedly do the Resurrection of Osiris ceremony every time we get a new president to emulate the instillment of the spirit of Osiris into the new pharaoh, the new president. And that's why it's called the House of the Holy, the House of the Sacred Wisdom, the Gnosis. And I looked up his claim about the Freemasons using the word, and I did find one. It said, Herodome is a significant word in high degree Freemasonry from French Rose Croix rituals, where it refers to a mythical mountain in Scotland, the legendary site of the first such chapter. Possible explanations include Hieros Domos, Greek for holy house, Herodim, Hebrew for overseers, Herodum, Latin for of the heirs, which all kind of goes along with what Downard's trying to say. There's a heritage, there's a secret cabal of magicians, of overseers, trying to create a new world order through psychodrama rituals and the assassination of the president, JFK. So, next time, I'm going to come back to you as soon as I can with part two. And in part two, we're going to continue the journey through King Kill 33. We're going to talk about chapters or sets 4 through 6. We're going to talk about Kennedy, Beale, and Bouvier, the sacred woman, Miss Chudley, Marilyn Monroe's Shriner husband, Bob Slatzer, divine and sacred names connecting JFK to Ball, Jackie Onassis's Bouvier bloodline, the Radzivill Royals, mystical toponymy, the 32nd degree of latitude that connects through the Tres Hermanas. Talk some more about Macbeth and the Great Horror, and the state of Texas, Illuminate Confirmed Texas, the Lone Pentagram State. And he talks about the symbolism of the color red, the history of Houston, more Macbeth, Texas is Masonic control system, Kabbalah, psychosexual rituals, and the alchemical detonation of primordial matter at the Trinity Site in 1945. Which, as you know, is what opened up the gates, opened up the portals for Kenneth Grant and Aleister Crowley's UFO aliens to come through. After Jack Parsons was doing his Scarlet Woman ritual to the Great Whore, the Whore of Babylon. See how it all fits together? And then you throw in the Twin Peaks thing and you're like, oh my god, David Lynch and Mark Frost were definitely reading Downard, right? But we're not even close to done. I mean, this was a primer. This is the introduction. So get ready, because I'm hitting you with two more bonus shows, baby. So stay subscribed to the... you're already subscribed. Thank you for supporting the show. Sorry, my outros are getting confused. Thank you for supporting the show. Honestly, from the bottom of my heart, you changed my life. You give me the resources it takes to do this kind of research and present it and record it and all the softwares I got to sign up for and video cameras and I had to buy a new mic thing and I got these interfaces. I mean, you won't believe how much it goes. And I have a crappy studio. I don't imagine how much these guys like Greg Carl would put this massive studio together. I'm like, bro, that's insane. But you keep this thing on the tracks, and that's more than I could ask for. So thank you so much for your support. And until next time, stay positive.